If you see a thirsty turtle, you're in the right place. Hello, and welcome to Best Motorcycle Roads. I'm Tom.
And I'm Todd. We have over 65 years of combined motorcycling experience and 30 years of planning and riding motorcycle trips. We're here to share with you everything we've learned over those years.
Our goal at Best Motorcycle Roads is simple. Make your next motorcycle trip the best it can be. We'll dive into technology, planning, packing, the routes, other tips, and everything in between.
From essential prep to unforgettable routes, we've got you covered.
Before we kickstart today's journey, we ask you to sign up for our BMR Rider Alerts. It's our way of keeping you in the loop with the latest rides, tips, and stories. We promise no spam, only the essentials to enhance your motorcycle adventures. Join the BMR crew today. We'll put a link in the show notes. This segment about motorcycle gear reviews and tips we call the toolkit. Let's talk about engine guards in the toolkits today. Maybe why do you need them or why would you want them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, for safety, to keep your motorcycle engine from getting damaged if your bike tips over, it also can save your legs from getting crushed between the engine and the highway or the road. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's lots of good reasons for having them. And I have tipped over my motorcycle more than once, sometimes just in the car wash, but I have tipped it over at intersections before. And yeah, the bike won't lay all the way over then. It'll kind of sit at a 45 degree angle, probably depending on the motorcycle guards that you have, the engine guards that you have. Mine have always just stopped at about 45 degrees. But if it were to go all the way over and my leg was still under, it wouldn't be trapped.
It's a problem.
It wouldn't be pinned. Yeah, I mean, without those, it would be a problem. But, you know, it saves a lot of damage to the sides of the motor, you know, and... But there's plenty of reasons to have
And I think
them.
The motor itself would probably be fine. You know, you're kind of just saving the scrape factor a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, if it gets really bad. But you're right. And then I think you had talked about, too, it's a place to mount things to a little bit, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people will mount the highway pegs like we've talked about before. You can mount lights.
Extra lights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just kind of one of those things, I think. Probably just something for someone to sell you as well, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I've seen people mount cameras there too.
That's a great view of a camera.
It really is, because you can see the front tire.
Yeah, it gives a little perspective.
Yeah, it's a neat perspective.
It is cool. Turkall has a good video of him out in the mountains with the camera mounted down there.
Does he?
But he always says, 5 minutes after in, I sure wished I would have known that the butterfly had hit the screen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's true. You do have to check those pretty often to make sure you don't have something squished on the lens. You know?
So I would say engine guards, for the most part, not necessary, but a nice to have.
Very nice to have. They're not very expensive.
No.
Right?
Uh-uh.
And there's you're buying them fitted for your bike. So
they
have bolt patterns and bolt setup ready to go into your bike.
It's a takeoff, a bolt that's maybe in the engine frame and bolt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes they clamp on if there's no.
Yeah.
No, they're really good. Again, one of those things you want to make sure is look at the specifications on them when you're torquing them down, because it does take a lot. Like you sometimes you put those highway pegs on there, you're really
for
pushing on
pegs,
them
for sure.
And stuff like that. Yeah, so cool.
Ride-wise is the section we focus on planning and safety tips. Ride-wise, let's talk about gear security. So how do you secure your helmets, your jackets, luggage, and all that kind of stuff when you're going to take a break? Let's talk about some recommendations. Tom, what do you think?
Well, we'll start with helmets, because there's a couple options, right? So firstly, a lot of people put them in their bags, you know, especially if you're on day trips. But like where we're on these longer trips, you know, your bags are already full, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, a lot of the like accessory manufacturers, like a Curie-Icon, they'll make a special little clip one that hooks on the handlebar.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look... motorcycles that were made up until, say, 2010, a lot of them have a place to to put your helmet. So, like, on your Goldwing, there's some hooks in the back.
Yep,
and I think you can release them, and they pop open. You hook the D-ring of the helmet over, and then it locks back up. So a lot of times it'll be one of those. There are, on some of the newer bikes, too, there's a panhandle-looking thing, and it kind of plugs into the side, and there's a little release for it. So it's the same thing. Most of the time, people don't like those. And the reason being is because the helmet ends up touching the bike.
Yeah.
Either the pipes or the somethings. Right. So it's a great idea, but when it's hanging down and you just got done riding for 2 hours and you put the helmet on the pipes, you're melting something. You know, and then I don't like to leave the headsets out just exposed.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is a lot of times those force your helmet to be upside down.
They can.
Well, if it's raining or drizzling,
that's a good point.
That's not a good way to keep your helmet sitting outside.
So you've held that. And then, also, like, the other X factor to me is, again, on trips or these things, where you put a jacket. Because you're usually taking that off. You want to get off when you're not riding. So what I've found, the thing that I like to use is like a bicycle lock. Mm. One of those cable locks. Mm-hmm. It has a key. They fold up small, you know, as a softball size when everything's done. There's a key. And then you can run the you can run it through a jacket's sleeve.
Sleeve, that's a good idea.
And then through the modular helmet, you know, the flap or the D-ring if you have a really small helmet. And then you can just hook it on somewhere on the bike. You know, probably not the handlebars because you might be able to take it off. But
true.
But no, if you just loop it somewhere and then it's so compact, you can just leave it on the bike all the time.
Yeah.
So it works pretty well.
Yeah. That's a good idea. You know, I've never really locked up my stuff like that. I mean, I lock stuff in the trunk and lock it in the side bags. But, I mean, when we're going in to eat somewhere, we put our helmets on the seat. If someone wants to wear my sweaty helmet.
I think the biggest place.
We throw the jacket over the helmet. I don't know.
Yeah, I think of the one place where it would have been a good idea, and I think we probably just found space in our trunk. Like when we were in Memphis or when we were in St. Louis or some of these. Or a place where you're going to be leaving the bike.
Park and walk.
Not kind of visual on it. So, yeah. So, I think it's a great cheap option. I mean, people want it. They want it. They're going to steal it. You know, you're kind of, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
But it just deters enough to, like, not someone just.
Yeah, I've never thought of the bike lock.
Right? Yeah, it's great. It works really, really good. So.
Seems very logical.
Yep. So, other than that.
The other thing is, you know, when we're going to be like overnight at the hotel and maybe you don't want to bring everything in, you know, a lot of us have just like half covers over the bike, you know, or full cover, whatever. But if you just cover the bike, that's sort of as a deterrent for someone to snoop around your bike. I mean, if they're walking by and they see a phone on your handlebars and it's easy to grab, you know, that could be. But honestly, if you cover the bike,
it's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind.
For sure.
I don't feel like people are going to reach in and try and just look under your cover to grab a GPS.
Right.
Any of that kind of stuff.
You know, and the old bikes, I think, had the old handlebar locks.
Yeah.
I don't know if they even have those anymore. I know they think they work that well. But I know a lot of city people will also use, there's a rotor lock.
Mm-hmm.
And you can clamp a rotor. So that'll help a little bit.
Yeah.
That's helpful too.
Yeah, I haven't had to use one of those.
No, I mean, we don't.
We're in Iowa.
And probably leave the keys in it. So. Yeah, well, they don't even have, the new ones don't have keys anyway. So.
True, the fob.
The fob. Yeah. So. The next segment is what we call the mile marker. It's our story segment. In the mile marker today, we're going to talk about the Mississippi River exploration. So it's a long, it's kind of a big subject. You and I have not been all the way to the top, I don't think, or the bottom. We've circled around, but so basically there's a lake in Minnesota.
I need to correct this. So several episodes ago, we were talking about the Mississippi River Road ride. I mistakenly mentioned where I thought the Mississippi started, and my daughter watched the podcast. She's like, Dad,
duh,
get your facts right. It doesn't start. So I need to say that the Mississippi River starts in, like, Lake Itasca.
Right.
And I think you said it was close to Bemidji, and I was like, no, I don't think so. No, it is. That's close.
Emily, I got you.
Thanks, Emily. She caught me.
So, yeah, it's, originally, I was looking up some facts for this. Originally, the Mississippi River is 2,552 miles long, but now it has since reduced itself by 200 miles. So I suppose just, I don't know, that's what the Wikipedia said. It's 2318 now, so it's lost 200 miles. I'm assuming we either, you know, I didn't look and see why. I probably should have. That would have been helpful, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So the Gulf maybe is moving.
Well,
inland.
I'm assuming that the water is taking control and straightening things out. But
I see. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
I would definitely. I think the next time we get up there, there's a day and time I'd love to ride from Lake Itasca all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
So interestingly enough, it actually is the Gulf of Mexico, which I generally, in my mind, always thought that New Orleans was the bottom of Louisiana. It's not. So I've actually checked. There's 70 miles south of until the Mississippi goes into the Gulf.
I'll be darned.
Which is kind of cool. But yeah, there's some great, there's a, what's really cool, the Minnesota DNR actually has a webcam running all the time up at the lake in Minnesota. So you can see in any given time, if you search for Start of the Mississippi webcam, and you can see, I was looking at it earlier today, there's people standing there and there's a placard, you know.
Oh, really?
So yeah, we'll have to check that out sometime, but that would be cool.
And what it's, so it's a river that flows out of the lake?
Correct. And you can walk, I mean, it's like there's rocks. Like you can walk over across it. It's probably about 10 feet wide, but it's walkable, you know. So, yeah.
Well, let's really cool. Let's make a trip up there.
Definitely. But also, I mean, in St. Paul, on that side, clearly it splits the two cities, but it's pretty narrow. I don't know if you've been through that.
I have, but I just don't remember.
I mean, I would say it's, you're like, huh. Like, it just looks like a river you might see in any given town. So.
Huh.
So it's kind of cool to see that. I think there's a convention center that's sitting right on the river, and part of the deck you can watch. Mm-hmm. And it's small. So
not many barges up there.
Not a lot of barges there, no. Maybe a small pontoon. No, not quite that small. But basically, when you talk about the Mississippi Road, you're really talking about the Great River Road. So, I mean, there's a lot of websites. There's one big website for that. Experience Mississippi River is kind of the home. And you can get a map. And it's kind of, there's not one Great River Road, even though they call it the Great River Road. I think on both sides, they actually sometimes call it the Great River Road.
Oh.
So there's a lot of cool things on both sides of rivers as you work your way down through the states. And the number of states at the Mississippi River is pretty cool, too, if you start to count through them. So, yeah, I've mostly stayed on the Wisconsin side, I think, went up in the north part. Because I think the west side pretty much leads you right into the cities, and I think we try to get away from there normally when we've been riding bikes. But
yeah, I feel like a few times when I have ridden north, I think I've ridden on the west side. I've ridden more on the, you know, the Iowa side, but
When you get there, but then when you get to Minnesota, I think we generally will jump.
Maybe that's
what, and most of the time probably where we're heading too. So.
Yeah,
but no, I mean, but one of my favorite little stretches is there's McGregor, Iowa to Lansing. And it's almost where the Iowa side ends. Most people cross the river, go to Wisconsin. And that's what a lot of people in this area call the Great River Road. It's on that, the Wisconsin side. But there's a really great road. And it just, there's bluffs, a lot of bluffs up there. So you're riding, I mean, really close to the bluffs. And then the road, train track, river. And it's a really cool, it's not really long, but it's a great stretch. But then south of St. Louis, I don't know if you've rode this as much. Mike and I have rode this one a few times, but you get south of St. Louis, you can take 61 and it goes all the way down to like Cape Girardeau. It actually goes right down, pretty much down to Paducah, Kentucky. That's a really good riding down there south of St. Louis as well.
I know I've been through Paducah with you guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know how exactly we got there.
I don't remember that either.
But I know that Mike and I left one time and I think met you guys. But we ended up going around St. Louis and we cut back to the river and rode right along that. It was a nice ride, for sure.
Yeah.
So, and then not too far away from that, we've talked about this before.
Is that the Bald Knob?
Yeah. Pass?
Oh, yeah. That's like Alto Pass,
Illinois. Yeah, yeah, it's by Carbon, not far from
not
Carbondale.
Far from, right. And it's, you know, this hill, really, that has this cross that they erected that's like a
big metal cross.
Yeah, metal cross, 111 feet tall.
It's huge.
I think it was completed in the early 60s. They started it, had the thoughts about it in the 50s, but then sometime in the early 2000s, it needed like a lot of repairs.
Yeah.
And they did a big restoration project on it and reskinned the whole thing. They added a bunch of lights and it stands like, you know, over 1,000 feet above sea level. It can be seen from like 7,500 square miles around. I mean, it's
big.
It's super impressive.
It really is like, across out in the middle of southern Illinois.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty neat. They have a lot of events up there because it's kind of a big wide open area at the top. And, you know, it's a great view.
It's a great view.
And I know that they've got an eclipse.
They have worship services up there sometimes,
they do,
too. It's kind of neat.
Services.
Yeah. So
they're going to do an eclipse viewing party there. And it's pretty cool.
It is. A couple other towns along the river that are cool. Just Sebula is on the Iowa side, right across from Savannah. And I always think that it's a really cool causeway that goes from like Sebula to Savannah. It's not the Florida Keys by any stretch, but there's water on both sides at times. It's just kind of a cool.
Yeah.
And they used to have a really cool great bridge, grated, like metal grate bridge, but that's been replaced now. I think it was too old. But and then on the other side in Savannah, in Illinois, there's a couple kind of very popular like destinations. The Iron Horse Social Club is in like downtown Savannah. Mm-hmm. Old bar.
Very old bar.
Cool. Yeah. Tons of like, it's almost like a mini museum, really, right?
They've got a lot of bikes in there.
Yeah.
They've got stained glass windows.
Yeah.
And churches. I mean, huge ones.
Right.
But I think those are up on the second level, if I remember right. I think when we went there, we stayed on the bottom level, but a couple of us did walk up.
I didn't.
I don't know if it was closed or, you know, just lights were off, but. There was another gigantic bar up there, and I seem to remember there was big stained glass windows and
ton of old bikes, like
lots of old bikes,
20s, 10s, you know, some old early Indians. Bikes.
Yeah, it was neat. Yeah. It was just a regular museum, and maybe they opened that up for special occasions. I don't know, but
and then Poopies is out by the more out of town, and that's kind of the place where they have bands, and it's kind of a big place now. I mean, there's like the last time I was there was a restaurant. And a tattoo shop, and a big bar, and a huge area to have like concerts and stuff. It looked like there could be a lot of people there. Yeah, I've never been to it when it was like an event, but it looks cool.
Yeah.
There's another little town that's kind of interesting, lots of history. I've wanted to go there a few times, we just keep never getting there, but it's called Nauvoo, Illinois. Now, they do have some wineries, but what's interesting is this is kind of like the epicenter of the American Indian settlements in that time. The river kind of comes back, so there's kind of a lowland of area. It's really interesting if you're into that history, check it out, because there was a huge settlement of American Indians in that area. Like, they're thinking millions of... It's a town.
Really?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And then another really odd fact is Joseph Smith actually lived there for a while. Who was the guy that published the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
And so there's a Mormon church there as well, but don't confuse that with the musical, The Book of Mormon.
Okay. So I've seen that. It's great.
Back, one more place that's kind of back where the Bald Knob is a little town called Chester, Illinois. And as you're crossing over from Missouri to Illinois, there's a little park to stop at. It's right off. I mean, you get across the bridge, and I can't remember if you turn left or right, but there's a little park, and they have a statue of Popeye the Sailor, because I think that was his hometown.
They made that his hometown.
Yeah, so it's cool. Yeah. It's a great place to take a picture. So I think for me, mostly my memories about the Great River Road in general, the Mississippi River, is just so many times when we're coming home. Mm-hmm. When we're coming from the north, we'll head that Wisconsin side. And I don't know. If you never, like, checked out the lock and dam systems that the Mississippi River has, are way cool. So that's cool. And then there's a train track that generally, there's a lot of train traffic on there.
Yeah, it's very busy.
You know, and then it's usually, you know, the sun's coming down and it's just a great look. And that's what I think of a lot when I think of it. So
yeah, I know whenever I'm riding along the river, it's just neat to see people out fishing.
Yeah.
It's neat to see a barge, you know, making its way up or down the river. Just the amount of use that the river gets, that area is used,
you know, and then, yeah, we're right in the summertime, you know, they'll have like three or four or six barges connected to a tugboat just full of grains or something.
And it's actually interesting, if you've never seen that, to watch
a
barge go through the whole lock and dam system, because...
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And those things have been around since the 50s or 40s. They're really old and so well engineered, and they still work.
It's
amazing.
It's neat. And then... Yeah. Sometimes it's a treat, then you'll see a couple like small boats in there with them, and it's just it's wild.
Yeah, so. To see a little tiny
but it's a huge boat.
20-foot boat go in next to a
barge.
It's silly to look at. Yeah.
The podcast can be found on bestmotorcycleroads.com/podcast. All the information you need will be there. But you can subscribe on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple, Pocket Casts, and YouTube.
This is the interactive segment. We will be looking for input from you. We want you to send us your questions and suggestions for roads, topics, and anything else you have on your mind. So today's Q&A comes from Carly, And Carly asks, how do you keep the group together and organized during a ride, especially when riders have different skill levels or
preferences?
We usually
don't. They just...
Yeah, we just leave them at home.
Depends on who.
Well, in our group, we've had kind of the same group that rides all the time. So for us, we know who's riding with us. We know the skill levels. And all of us now use the headset communicators. Yeah. So that's the preferred method. But I understand that if you're organizing a ride that, you know, people that you don't know are going to be joining you, the chances of you having headsets and communicators that will link together is probably slim to none. But,
correct.
So at that point, you know, you really want to talk about some hand signals. You kind of want to find out the experience level of the riders that are coming with. And generally, I would say try and keep the less experienced riders towards the back. But you do want to have somebody in the far back, maybe that does have a communicator that says, we're going a little too fast. Can we slow it down? You know, the back of the group isn't catching up. So that you're not overriding those beginners and pushing them. But then, excuse me, also talk about if you get to an intersection and you get split up. Plan ahead so everybody understands we're going to watch. If the group gets split, the front half of the group is going to pull over off to the side of the road where it's safe, and we're just going to wait.
Yeah.
And so that the back riders don't have to try and bust ass and catch up. They just know they're going to be waiting for us. So as they start coming up, they can flash their lights and the rest of the group can pull out.
Yep.
But I think that's probably the best thing to do. Talk about it before you leave, just so there's no fear in the back. Like, I don't know the route. I hope they don't leave me. And then you're trying to race to get up there.
And a few of us will run full on map action, you know, and a lot of the newer people may not have all that tech. And sometimes it's hard to get the maps uploaded. So yeah, I would say that. If you're in a small group, like let's just say two inexperienced and you're inexperienced, then I let them lead because then they just go at their pace.
Oh,
you know, like that's if it's small.
Yeah.
But if it's big, I like lead, you know, experience in the front, experience in the back, and then just keep everyone going. I mean, you don't want people, like it's already uncomfortable enough, you
is.
Know. I mean, there's enough stress and things that you don't need to add it by having people think that you're pushing them.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
And I think I've mentioned that, I mention it all the time. I know the first time I rode in a group ride, even after riding my motorcycle for 10 years or more, the one weird thing that I kept focusing on was the stagger and the distances.
Yeah.
Am I too close? Am I too far back? Am I in the right side of the lane or the left side of the lane?
Yep.
And unfortunately, I think beginner riders, that's probably common that they're worried about that. So that's all they focus on. They're looking at the back tire of the person in front of them,
which is probably a really bad idea.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, we want to make everyone comfortable. Just don't worry about that as much.
And to your point, Todd, you know, I don't know if we've ever talked about the stagger. So you know, I mean, your motorcycle is quite a bit narrower than a car. And the reason why you stagger is because you can ride a little bit closer together, but then if someone breaks soon, you kind of have a little more buffer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a little bit, you know, and some people will ride really tight. I mean, some of these big group rides, they want you tight and they want you on top of each other. And that can get a little, it can get a little nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
But it is nice to run stagger if every other person is kind of staggering. It just gives you just a little bit more time to find a little more space. And it works out pretty good, too.
Yeah.
So, now it's time for the last mile. It's our way to close the episode with our reflections. So what about this episode about the Mississippi River, Todd, for you?
I just love it. I love riding along the Mississippi River. You know, just it just winds and it's twisty in the you know, just the scenery.
Yeah.
Seeing people on the river. The scenery is great. The you know, the sun casting shadows is cool, or reflecting off the water.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, if you get a chance, ride the Great River Road.
Yeah.
Pick a side and ride it one direction and then
turn around.
Go to the other side and ride the other way on the way home.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like I said, my favorite thing about that is sometimes coming home, I think about that a lot when we're riding, and then, I don't know, it's cool. It's a great, there's not much bad to see there. If this episode revved up your day, don't keep it to yourself. Like, subscribe, and share it with your crew. We're all about the thrill of the ride and the bond it creates.
Keep the spirit of adventure alive, and remember, bikes, friends, and endless roads. The stories ride forever. Take care.